he roared, shaking the chains and urging the creatures toward the fence where the class stood. Everyone drew back slightly as Hagrid reached them and tethered the creatures to the fence. "Hippogriffs!" Hagrid roared happily, waving a hand at them. "Beautiful, aren't they?" Harry could sort of see what Hagrid meant. Once you got over the first shock of seeing something that was half horse, half bird, you started to appreciate the hippogriffs' gleaming coats, changing smoothly from feather to hair, each of them a different color, stormy gray, bronze, pinkish roan, gleaming chestnut, and inky black.
"So," said Hagrid, rubbing his hands together and beaming around, "if you want to come a bit nearer."
No one seemed to want to. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, however, approached the fence cautiously.
"Now, first thing you got to know about hippogriffs is they're proud," said Hagrid. "Easily offended, hippogriffs are. Don't never insult one, 'cause it might be the last thing you do."
Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle weren't listening. They were talking in an undertone, and Harry had a nasty feeling they were plotting how best to disrupt the lesson.
"You always wait for the hippogriff to make the first move," Hagrid continued. "It's polite, see? You walk toward him, and you bow, and you wait. And if he bows back, you're allowed to touch him. If he doesn't bow, then get away from him sharpish, 'cause those talons hurt. Right, who wants to go first?"
Most of the class backed farther away in answer. Even Harry, Ron, and Hermione had misgivings. The hippogriffs were tossing their fierce heads and flexing their powerful wings. They didn't seem to like being tethered like this.
"No one?" said Hagrid with a pleading look.
"I'll do it," said Harry.
There was an intake of breath from behind him, and both Lavender and Parvati whispered,
"Oh, no, Harry, remember your tea leaves."
Harry ignored them. He climbed over the paddock fence.
"Good man, Harry," roared Hagrid. "Right then, let's see how you get on with Buckbeak."
He untied one of the chains, pulled the grey hippogriff away from its fellows, and slipped off its leather collar. The class on the other side of the paddock seemed to be holding its breath. Malfoy's eyes were narrowed maliciously.
"Easy now, Harry," said Hagrid quietly. "You've got eye contact. Now try not to blink. Hippogriffs don't trust you if you blink too much."
Harry's eyes immediately began to water, but he didn't shut them. Buckbeak had turned his great sharp head and was staring at Harry with one fierce orange eye.
"That's it," said Hagrid. "That's it, Harry. Now, bow."
Harry didn't feel much like exposing the back of his neck to Buckbeak, but he did as he was told. He gave a short bow and then looked up. The hippogriff was still staring haughtily at him. It didn't move.
"Ah," said Hagrid, sounding worried. "Right. Back away now, Harry. Easy does it."
But then, to Harry's enormous surprise, the hippogriff suddenly bent its scaly front knees and sank into what was an unmistakable bow.
"Well done, Harry," said Hagrid, ecstatic. "Right. You can touch him. Pat his beak. Go on."
Feeling that a better reward would have been to back away, Harry moved slowly toward the hippogriff and reached out toward it. He patted the beak several times, and the hippogriff closed its eyes lazily, as though enjoying it. The class broke into applause, all except for Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, who were looking deeply disappointed.
"Right then, Harry," said Hagrid. "I reckon he might let you ride him."
This was more than Harry had bargained for. He was used to a broomstick, but he wasn't sure a hippogriff would be quite the same.
"You climb up there, just behind the wing joint," said Hagrid, "and mind you don't pull any of his feathers out. He won't like that."
Harry put his foot on the top of Buckbeak's wing and hoisted himself onto its back. Buckbeak stood up. Harry wasn't sure where to hold on. Everything in front of him was covered with feathers.
"Go on, then,"
roared Hagrid, slapping the hippogriff's hindquarters. Without warning, 12-foot wings flapped open on either side of Harry. He just had time to seize the hippogriff around the neck before he was soaring upward. It was nothing like a broomstick, and Harry knew which one he preferred. The hippogriff's wings beat uncomfortably on either side of him, catching him under his legs and making him feel he was about to be thrown off. The glossy feathers slipped under his fingers, and he didn't dare get a stronger grip. Instead of the smooth action of his Nimbus 2000, he now felt himself rocking backward and forward as the hind quarters of the hippogriff rose and fell with its wings. Buckbeak flew him once around the paddock and then headed back to the ground. This was the bit Harry had been dreading. He leaned back as the smooth neck lowered, feeling he was going to slip off over the beak, then felt a heavy thud as the four ill-assorted feet hit the ground. He just managed to hold on and push himself straight again.
"Good work, Harry!"
roared Hagrid as everyone except Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle cheered.
"Okay, who else wants a go?"
Emboldened by Harry's success, the rest of the class climbed cautiously into the paddock. Hagrid untied the hippogriffs one by one, and soon people were bowing nervously all over the paddock. Neville ran repeatedly backward from his, which didn't seem to want to bend its knees. Ron and Hermione practiced on the chestnut while Harry watched. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle had taken over Buckbeak. He had bowed to Malfoy, who was now patting his beak, looking disdainful.
"This is very easy," Malfoy drawled, loud enough for Harry to hear him. "I knew it must have been. If Potter could do it, I bet you're not dangerous at all, are you?" he said to the hippogriff. "Are you, you great ugly brute?"
It happened in a flash of steely talons. Malfoy let out a high-pitched scream, and next moment Hagrid was wrestling Buckbeak back into his collar as he strained to get at Malfoy, who lay curled in the grass, blood blossoming over his robes.
"I'm dying!" Malfoy yelled as the class panicked. "I'm dying! Look at me! It's killed me!"
"You're not dying," said Hagrid, who had gone very white. "Someone help me! Got to get him out of here!"
Hermione ran to hold open the gate as Hagrid lifted Malfoy easily. As they passed, Harry saw that there was a long, deep gash on Malfoy's arm. Blood splattered the grass, and Hagrid ran with him up the slope toward the castle. Very shaken, the Care of Magical Creatures class followed at a walk. The Slytherins were all shouting about Hagrid.
"They should fire him straight away," said Pansy Parkinson, who was in tears. "It was Malfoy's fault," snapped Dean Thomas.
Crabbe and Goyle flexed their muscles threateningly. They all climbed the stone steps into the deserted entrance hall.
"I'm going to see if he's okay," said Pansy, and they all watched her run up the marble staircase.
The Slytherins, still muttering about Hagrid, headed away in the direction of their dungeon common room. Harry, Ron, and Hermione proceeded upstairs to Gryffindor Tower.
"Do you think he'll be all right?" said Hermione nervously.
"Course he will. Madame Pomfrey can mend cuts in about a second," said Harry, who had had far worse injuries mended magically by the nurse.
"That was a really bad thing to happen in Hagrid's first class, though, wasn't it?"
said Ron, looking worried. "Just Malfoy to mess things up for him."
They were among the first to reach the Great Hall at dinner time, hoping to see Hagrid, but he wasn't there.
"They wouldn't fire him, would they?"
said Hermione anxiously, not touching her steak and kidney pudding.
"They'd better not," said Ron, who wasn't eating either.
Harry was watching the Slytherin table. A large group, including Crabbe and Goyle, was huddled together, deep in conversation. Harry was sure they were cooking up their own version of how Malfoy had been injured.
"Well, you can't say it wasn't an interesting first day back," said Ron gloomily.
They went up to the crowded Gryffindor common room after dinner and tried to do the homework Professor McGonagall had given them, but all three of them kept breaking off and glancing out of the tower window.
"There's a light on in Hagrid's window," Harry said suddenly.
Ron looked at his watch.
"If we hurried, we could go down and see him. It's still quite early."
"I don't know," Hermione said slowly, and Harry saw her glance at him.
"I'm allowed to walk across the grounds," he said pointedly. "Sirius Black hasn't got past the Dementors yet, has he?"
So they put their things away and headed out of the portrait hall, glad to meet nobody on their way to the front doors, as they weren't entirely sure they were supposed to be out. The grass was still wet and looked almost black in the twilight. When they reached Hagrid's hut, they knocked, and a voice growled,
"Come in."
Hagrid was sitting in his shirt sleeves at his scrubbed wooden table. His boarhound Fang had his head in Hagrid's lap. One look told them that Hagrid had been drinking a lot. There was a pewter tankard almost as big as a bucket in front of him, and he seemed to be having difficulty getting them into focus.
"Specs is a record,"
he said thickly when he recognized them.
"Don't reckon they've ever had a teacher who lasted only a day before."
"You haven't been fired, Hagrid?" gasped Hermione.
"Not yet,"
said Hagrid miserably, taking a huge gulp of whatever was in the tankard.
"It's only a matter of time, isn't it? After Malfoy."
"How is he?"
said Ron as they all sat down.
"It wasn't serious, was it?"
"Madame Pomfrey fixed him best she could,"
said Hagrid dully.
"But he's saying it's still agony. Covered in bandages, moaning."
"He's faking it," said Harry at once. "Madame Pomfrey can mend anything. She regrew half my bones last year. Trust Malfoy to milk it for all it's worth."
"School governors have been told, of course,"
said Hagrid miserably.
"They reckon I started too big. Should have left hippogriffs for later. Done flubberworms or summat. Just thought it'd make a good first lesson. It's all my fault."
"It's all Malfoy's fault, Hagrid," said Hermione earnestly.
"We're witnesses," said Harry. "You said hippogriffs attack if you insult them. It's Malfoy's problem that he wasn't listening. We'll tell Dumbledore what really happened."
"Yeah, don't worry, Hagrid, we'll back you up," said Ron.
Tears leaked out of the crinkled corners of Hagrid's beetle-black eyes. He grabbed both Harry and Ron and pulled them into a bone-breaking hug.
"I think you've had enough to drink, Hagrid," said Hermione firmly.
She took the tankard from the table and went outside to empty it.
"Ah, maybe she's right,"
said Hagrid, letting go of Harry and Ron, who both staggered away, rubbing their ribs. Hagrid heaved himself out of his chair and followed Hermione unsteadily outside. They heard a loud splash.
"What's he done?"
said Harry nervously, as Hermione came back in with the empty tankard.
"Suck his head in the water barrel,"
said Hermione, putting the tankard away. Hagrid came back, his long hair and beard sopping wet, wiping the water out of his eyes.
"That's better,"
he said, shaking his head like a dog and drenching them all.
"Listen, it was good of you to come and see me. I really..."
Hagrid stopped dead, staring at Harry as though he'd only just realized he was there.
"What do you think you're doing, eh?"
he roared, so suddenly that they jumped a foot in the air.
"You're not to go wandering around after dark, Harry, and you too, letting him."
Hagrid strode over to Harry, grabbed his arm and pulled him to the door.
"Come on," Hagrid said angrily. "I'm taking you all back up to school, and don't let me catch you walking down to see me after dark again. I'm not worth that."
Chapter 7 The Boggart in the Wardrobe. Malfoy didn't reappear in classes until late on Thursday morning, when the Slytherins and Gryffindors were halfway through double potions. He swaggered into the dungeon, his right arm covered in bandages and bound up in a sling, acting, in Harry's opinion, as though he were the heroic survivor of some dreadful battle.
"How is it, Draco?"
simpered Pansy Parkinson. "Does it hurt much?"
"Yeah," said Malfoy, putting on a brave sort of grimace, but Harry saw him wink at Crabbe and Goyle when Pansy had looked away.
"Settle down, settle down," said Professor Snape idly.
Harry and Ron scowled at each other. Snape wouldn't have said settle down if they'd walked in late. He'd have given them detention. But Malfoy had always been able to get away with anything in Snape's classes. Snape was head of Slytherin House and generally favored his own students above all others. They were making a new potion today, a shrinking solution. Malfoy set up his cauldron right next to Harry and Ron, so that they were preparing their ingredients on the same table.
"Sir," Malfoy called, "sir, I'll need help cutting up these daisy roots because of my arm."
"Weasley, cut up Malfoy's roots for him," said Snape without looking up.
Ron went brick red.
"There's nothing wrong with your arm," he hissed at Malfoy.
Malfoy smirked across the table.
"Weasley, you heard Professor Snape. Cut up these roots."
Ron seized his knife, pulled Malfoy's roots toward him, and began to chop them roughly so that they were all different sizes.
"Professor," drawled Malfoy, "Weasley's mutilating my roots, sir."
Snape approached their table, stared down his hooked nose at the roots, then gave Ron an unpleasant smile from beneath his long, greasy black hair.
"Change roots with Malfoy, Weasley."
"But, sir..."
Ron had spent the last quarter of an hour carefully shredding his own roots into exactly equal pieces.
"Now,"
said Snape in his most dangerous voice. Ron shoved his own beautifully cut roots across the table at Malfoy, then took up the knife again.
"And, sir, I'll need this shrivel fig skinned," said Malfoy, his voice full of malicious laughter.
"Potter, you can skin Malfoy's shrivel fig," said Snape, giving Harry the look of loathing he always reserved just for him.
Harry took Malfoy's shrivel fig as Ron began trying to repair the damage to the roots he now had to use. Harry skinned the shrivel fig as fast as he could and flung it back across the table at Malfoy without speaking. Malfoy was smirking more broadly than ever.
"Seen your pal Hagrid lately?" he asked them quietly.
"None of your business," said Ron jerkily without looking up.
"I'm afraid he won't be a teacher much longer," said Malfoy in a tone of mock sorrow. "Father's not very happy about my injury."
"Keep talking, Malfoy, and I'll give you a real injury," snarled Ron.
"He's complained to the school governors and to the Ministry of Magic. Father's got a lot of influence, you know, and a lasting injury like this..."
He gave a huge, fake sigh.
"Who knows if my arm'll ever be the same again?"
"So that's why you're putting it on," said Harry, accidentally beheading a dead caterpillar because his hand was shaking in anger, "to try to get Hagrid fired."
"Well," said Malfoy, lowering his voice to a whisper, "partly, Potter, but there are other benefits too. Weasley, slice my caterpillars for me."
A few cauldrons away, Neville was in trouble. Neville regularly went to pieces in potions lessons. It was his worst subject, and his great fear of Professor Snape made things 10 times worse. His potion, which was supposed to be a bright acid green, had turned...
"Orange? Longbottom?" said Snape, ladling some up and allowing it to splash back into the cauldron so that everyone could see. "Orange? Tell me, boy, does anything penetrate that thick skull of yours? Didn't you hear me say quite clearly that only one rat spleen was needed? Didn't I state plainly that a dash of leech juice would suffice? What do I have to do to make you understand, Longbottom?"
Neville was pink and trembling. He looked as though he was on the verge of tears.
"Please, sir," said Hermione, "please, I could help Neville put it right."
"I don't remember asking you to show off, Miss Granger," said Snape coldly, and Hermione went as pink as Neville. "Longbottom, at the end of this lesson, you will feed a few drops of this potion to your toad and see what happens. Perhaps that will encourage you to do it properly."
Snape moved away, leaving Neville breathless with fear.
"Help me,"
he moaned to Hermione.
"Hey, Harry," said Seamus Finnegan, leaning over to borrow Harry's brass scales. "Have you heard? Daily Prophet this morning. They reckon Sirius Black's been sighted."
"Where?"
said Harry and Ron quickly. On the other side of the table, Malfoy looked up, listening closely.
"Not too far from here,"
said Seamus, who looked excited.
It was a muggle who saw him. Cause she didn't really understand. The muggles think he's just an ordinary criminal, don't they? So she phoned the telephone hotline, and by the time the Ministry of Magic got there, he was gone.
Not too far from here? Ron repeated, looking significantly at Harry. He turned around and saw Malfoy watching closely.
What, Malfoy? Need something else skinned?
But Malfoy's eyes were shining malevolently, and they were fixed on Harry. He leaned across the table.
Thinking of trying to catch Black single-handed, Potter?
Yeah, that's right, said Harry offhandedly. Malfoy's thin mouth was curving in a mean smile.
Of course, if it was me, he said quietly, I'd have done something before now. I wouldn't be staying in school like a good boy. I'd be out there looking for him.
What are you talking about, Malfoy? Said Ron roughly.
Don't you know, Potter?
Breathed Malfoy, his pale eyes narrowed.
Know what?
Malfoy let out a low, sneering laugh.
Maybe you'd rather not risk your neck, he said. Want to leave it to the Dementors, do you? But if it was me, I'd want revenge. I'd hunt him down myself.
What are you talking about? Said Harry angrily. But at that moment Snape called. You should have finished adding your ingredients by now. This potion needs to stew before it can be drunk. So clear away while it simmers, and then we'll test Longbottom's.
Crabbe and Goyle laughed openly, watching Neville sweat as he stirred his potion feverishly. Hermione was muttering instructions to him out of the corner of her mouth so that Snape wouldn't see. Harry and Ron packed away their unused ingredients and went to wash their hands and ladles in the stone basin in the corner.
"What did Malfoy mean?" Harry muttered to Ron as he stuck his hands under the icy jet that poured from the gargoyle's mouth.
Why would I want revenge on Black? He hasn't done anything to me. Yet.
He's making it up, said Ron savagely. He's trying to make you do something stupid.
The end of the lesson in sight, Snape strode over to Neville, who was cowering by his cauldron.
Everyone gather round, said Snape, his black eyes glittering, and watch what happens to Longbottom's toad. If he has managed to produce a shrinking solution, it will shrink to a tadpole. If, as I don't doubt he has done it wrong, his toad is likely to be poisoned.
The Gryffindors watched fearfully. The Slytherins looked excited. Snape picked up Trevor, the toad, in his left hand, and dipped a small spoon into Neville's potion, which was now green. He trickled a few drops down Trevor's throat. There was a moment of hushed silence, in which Trevor gulped. Then there was a small pop, and Trevor the tadpole was wriggling in Snape's palm. The Gryffindors burst into applause. Snape, looking sour, pulled a small bottle from the pocket of his robe, poured a few drops on top of Trevor, and he reappeared suddenly, fully grown.
5 points from Gryffindor, said Snape, which wiped the smiles from every face. I told you not to help him, Miss Granger. Class dismissed!
Harry, Ron, and Hermione climbed the steps to the entrance hall. Harry was still thinking about what Malfoy had said while Ron was seething about Snape.
5 points from Gryffindor because the potion was all right? Why didn't you lie, Hermione? You should have said Neville did it all by himself.
Hermione didn't answer. Ron looked around.
Where is she?
Harry turned too. They were at the top of the steps now, watching the rest of the class pass them, heading for the great hall and lunch.
She was right behind us, said Ron, frowning.
Malfoy passed them, walking between Crabbe and Goyle. He smirked at Harry and disappeared.
There she is, said Harry.
Hermione was panting slightly, hurrying up the stairs. One hand clutched her bag. The other seemed to be tucking something down the front of her robes.
How did you do that? Said Ron.
What?
Said Hermione, joining them.
1 minute you were right behind us. The next moment you were back at the bottom of the stairs again.
What?
Hermione looked slightly confused.
Oh, I had to go back for something. Oh, no.
A seam had split on Hermione's bag. Harry wasn't surprised. He could see that it was crammed with at least a dozen large and heavy books.
"Why are you carrying all these around with you?"
Ron asked her.
"You know how many subjects I'm taking?"
said Hermione breathlessly.
"Couldn't hold these for me, could you?"
"But..." Ron was turning over the book she had handed him, looking at the covers.
"You haven't got any of these subjects today. It's only Defense Against the Dark Arts this afternoon."
"Oh, yes," said Hermione vaguely, but she packed all the books back into her bag just the same.
"I hope there's something good for lunch. I'm starving,"
she added, and she marched off toward the Great Hall.
"Do you get the feeling Hermione's not telling us something?"
Ron asked Harry. Professor Lupin wasn't there when they arrived at his first Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson. They all sat down, took out their books, quills, and parchment, and were talking when he finally entered the room. Lupin smiled vaguely and placed his tatty old briefcase on the teacher's desk. He was as shabby as ever, but looked healthier than he had on the train, as though he had had a few square meals.
"Good afternoon," he said. "Would you please put all your books back in your bags? Today will be a practical lesson. You will need only your wands."
A few curious looks were exchanged as the class put away their books. They had never had a practical Defense Against the Dark Arts before, unless you counted the memorable class last year when their old teacher had brought a cage full of pixies to class and set them loose.
"Right then," said Professor Lupin, when everyone was ready. "If you'd follow me..."
Puzzled but interested, the class got to its feet and followed Professor Lupin out of the classroom. He led them along the deserted corridor and around a corner, where the first thing they saw was Peeves the Poltergeist, who was floating upside down in midair and stuffing the nearest keyhole with chewing gum. Peeves didn't look up until Professor Lupin was 2 feet away. Then he wiggled his curly-toed feet and broke into song.
"Loony, loopy Lupin,"
Peeves sang.
"Loony, loopy Lupin, loony, loopy Lupin."
Rude and unmanageable as he almost always was, Peeves usually showed some respect toward the teachers. Everyone looked quickly at Professor Lupin to see how he would take this. To their surprise, he was still smiling.
"I'd take that gum out of the keyhole if I were you, Peeves," he said pleasantly. "Mr. Filch won't be able to get into his brooms."
Filch was the Hogwarts caretaker, a bad-tempered, failed wizard who waged a constant war against the students and, indeed, Peeves. However, Peeves paid no attention to Professor Lupin's words, except to blow a loud, wet raspberry. Professor Lupin gave a small sigh and took out his wand.
"This is a useful little spell," he told the class over his shoulder. "Please watch closely."
He raised the wand to shoulder height, said,
"Wadiwasi,"
and pointed it at Peeves. With the force of a bullet, the wad of chewing gum shot out of the keyhole and straight down Peeves's left nostril. He whirled upright and zoomed away, cursing.
"Cool, sir," said Dean Thomas in amazement.
"Thank you, Dean," said Professor Lupin, putting his wand away again.
"Shall we proceed?"
They set off again, the class looking at shabby Professor Lupin with increased respect. He led them down a second corridor and stopped right outside the staff room door.
"Inside, please," said Professor Lupin, opening it and standing back.
The staff room, a long, panelled room full of old, mismatched chairs, was empty except for one teacher. Professor Snape was sitting in a low armchair, and he looked around as the class filed in. His eyes were glittering, and there was a nasty sneer playing around his mouth. As Professor Lupin came in and made to close the door behind him, Snape said,
"Leave it open, Lupin. I'd rather not witness this."
He got to his feet and strode past the class, his black robes billowing behind him. At the doorway he turned on his heel and said,
"Possibly no one's warned you, Lupin, but this class contains Neville Longbottom. I would advise you not to entrust him with anything difficult. Not unless
Miss Granger is hissing instructions in his ear. Neville went scarlet. Harry glared at Snape. It was bad enough that he bullied Neville in his own classes, let alone doing it in front of other teachers. Professor Lupin had raised his eyebrows. "I was hoping that Neville would assist me with the first stage of the operation," he said, "and I am sure he will perform it admirably." Neville's face went, if possible, even redder. Snape's lip curled, but he left, shutting the door with a snap. "Now then," said Professor Lupin, beckoning the class toward the end of the room, where there was nothing but an old wardrobe where the teachers kept their spare robes. As Professor Lupin went to stand next to it, the wardrobe gave a sudden wobble, banging off the wall. "Nothing to worry about," said Professor Lupin calmly, because a few people had jumped backward in alarm. "There's a bugot in there." Most people seemed to feel that this was something to worry about. Neville gave Professor Lupin a look of pure terror, and Seamus Finnegan eyed the now rattling doorknob apprehensively. "Bugots like dark enclosed spaces," said Professor Lupin. "Wardrobes, the gap beneath beds, the cupboards under sinks. I've even met one that had lodged itself in a grandfather clock. This one moved in yesterday afternoon, and I asked the headmaster if the staff would leave it to give my third year's some practice. So, the first question we must ask ourselves is, what is a bugot?" Hermione put up her hand. "It's a shape-shifter," she said. "It can take the shape of whatever it thinks will frighten us most." "Couldn't have put it better myself," said Professor Lupin, and Hermione glowed. "So the bugot, sitting in the darkness within, has not yet assumed a form. He does not yet know what will frighten the person on the other side of the door. Nobody knows what a bugot looks like when he is alone. But when I let him out, he will immediately become whatever each of us most fears. This means," said Professor Lupin, choosing to ignore Neville's small sputter of terror, "that we have a huge advantage over the bugot before we begin. Have you spotted it, Harry?" Trying to answer a question with Hermione next to him, bobbing up and down on the balls of her feet with her hand in the air, was very off-putting, but Harry had a go. Because there are so many of us, it won't know what shape it should be." "Precisely," said Professor Lupin, and Hermione put her hand down, looking a little disappointed. "It's always best to have company when you're dealing with a bogart. He becomes confused. Which should he become, a headless corpse or a flesh-eating slug? I once saw a bogart make that very mistake, tried to frighten two people at once, and turned himself into half a slug. Not remotely frightening. The charm that repels a bogart is simple. Yet it requires force of mind. You see, the thing that really finishes a bogart is laughter. What you need to do is force it to assume a shape that you find amusing. We will practice the charm without wands first. After me, please. Ridiculous!" "Ridiculous!" said the class together. "Good!" said Professor Lupin. "Very good. But that was the easy part, I'm afraid. You see, the word alone is not enough. And this is where you come in, Neville." The wardrobe shook again, though not as much as Neville, who walked forward as though he were heading for the gallows. "Right, Neville," said Professor Lupin. "First things first. What would you say is the thing that frightens you most in the world?" Neville's lips moved, but no noise came out. "Didn't catch that, Neville, sorry," said Professor Lupin cheerfully. Neville looked around rather wildly as though begging someone to help him, then said, in barely more than a whisper, "Professor Snape." Nearly everyone laughed. Even Neville grinned apologetically. Professor Lupin, however, looked thoughtful. "Professor Snape? Neville, I believe you live with your grandmother." Yes, said Neville nervously, "but I don't want the bugger to turn into her either.
"No, no, you misunderstand me," said Professor Looping, now smiling. "I wonder, could you tell us what sort of clothes your grandmother usually wears?"
Neville looked startled, but said,
"Well, always the same hat, a tall one with a stuffed vulture on top, and a long dress, green, normally, and sometimes a fox fur scarf."
"And a handbag?" prompted Professor Lupin.
"A big red one," said Neville.
"Right then," said Professor Lupin. "Can you picture those clothes very clearly, Neville? Can you see them in your mind's eye?"
"Yes,"
said Neville, uncertainly, plainly wondering what was coming next.
"When the boggart bursts out of this wardrobe, Neville, and sees you, it will assume the form of Professor Snape," said Lupin, "and you will raise your wand thus and cry, 'Ridiculous,' and concentrate hard on your grandmother's clothes. If all goes well, Professor Boggart Snape will be forced into that vulture-topped hat and that green dress with that big red handbag."
There was a great shout of laughter. The wardrobe wobbled more violently.
"If Neville is successful, the boggart is likely to shift his attention to each of us in turn," said Professor Lupin. "I would like all of you to take a moment now to think of the thing that scares you most, and imagine how you might force it to look comical."
The room went quiet. Harry thought, what scared him most in the world? His first thought was Lord Voldemort. A Voldemort returned to full strength. But before he had even started to plan a possible counterattack on a boggart Voldemort, a horrible image came floating to the surface of his mind. A rotting, glistening hand slithering back beneath a black cloak, a long rattling breath from an unseen mouth, then a cold, so penetrating it felt like drowning. Harry shivered, then looked around, hoping no one had noticed. Many people had their eyes shut tight. Ron was muttering to himself, "Take its legs off." Harry was sure he knew what that was about. Ron's greatest fear was spiders.
"Everyone ready?" said Professor Lupin.
Harry felt a lurch of fear. He wasn't ready. How could you make a Dementor less frightening? But he didn't want to ask for more time. Everyone else was nodding and rolling up their sleeves.
"Neville, we're going to back away," said Professor Lupin. "Let you have a clear field, all right? I'll call the next person forward. Everyone back, now, so Neville can get a clear shot."
They all retreated, backed against the walls, leaving Neville alone beside the wardrobe. He looked pale and frightened, but he had pushed up the sleeves of his robes and was holding his wand ready.
"On the count of three, Neville," said Professor Lupin, who was pointing his own wand at the handle of the wardrobe. "One, two, three, now."
A jet of spark shot from the end of Professor Lupin's wand and hit the doorknob. The wardrobe burst open. Hook-nosed and menacing, Professor Snape stepped out, his eyes flashing at Neville. Neville backed away, his wand up, mouthing wordlessly. Snape was bearing down upon him, reaching inside his robes.
"Ridiculous," squeaked Neville.
There was a noise like a whip crack. Snape stumbled. He was wearing a long, lace-trimmed dress and a towering hat topped with a moth-eaten vulture, and he was swinging a huge crimson handbag. There was a roar of laughter. The boggart paused, confused, and Professor Lupin shouted, "Parvati, forward!" Parvati walked forward, her face set. Snape rounded on her. There was another crack, and where he had stood was a blood-stained, bandaged mummy. Its sightless face was turned to Parvati, and it began to walk toward her very slowly, dragging its feet, its stiff arms rising.
"Ridiculous!" cried Parvati.
A bandage unraveled at the mummy's feet. It became entangled, fell face forward, and its head rolled off.
"Seamus!" roared Professor Lupin.
Seamus darted past Parvati.
Crack!
Where the mummy had been was a woman with floor-length black hair and a skeletal green-tinged face, a banshee. She opened her mouth wide, and an unearthly sound filled the room, a long, wailing shriek that made the hair on Harry's head stand on end.
"Ridiculous!"
shouted Seamus. The banshee made a rasping noise and clutched her throat. Her voice was gone. Crack! The banshee turned into a rat, which chased its tail in a circle. Then, crack! Became a rattlesnake, which slithered and writhed before, crack! Becoming a single bloody eyeball.
"It's confused!" shouted Lupin. "We're getting there, Dean!"
Dean hurried forward. Crack! The eyeball became a severed hand, which flipped over and began to creep along the floor like a crab.
"Ridiculous!"
yelled Dean. There was a snap, and the hand was trapped in a mousetrap.
"Excellent! Ron, you next!"
Ron leapt forward. Crack! Quite a few people screamed. A giant spider, 6 feet tall and covered in hair, was advancing on Ron, clicking its pincers menacingly. For a moment, Harry thought Ron had frozen, then...
"Ridiculous!"
bellowed Ron, and the spider's legs vanished. It rolled over and over. Lavender Brown squealed and ran out of its way, and it came to a halt at Harry's feet. He raised his wand, ready, but...
"Here!"
shouted Professor Lupin, suddenly hurrying forward.
Crack!
The legless spider had vanished. For a second everyone looked wildly around to see where it was. Then they saw a silvery white orb hanging in the air in front of Lupin, who said,
"Ridiculous!"
almost lazily.
Crack!
"Forward, Neville, and finish him off," said Lupin, as the boggart landed on the floor as a cockroach.
Crack!
Snape was back. This time Neville charged forward, looking determined.
"Ridiculous!"
he shouted, and they had a split-second view of Snape in his lacy dress before Neville let out a great ha! Of laughter, and the boggart exploded, burst into 1,000 tiny wisps of smoke, and was gone.
"Excellent!" cried Professor Lupin, as the class broke into applause. "Excellent, Neville. Well done, everyone. Let me see. 5 points to Gryffindor for every person to tackle the boggart. 10 for Neville because he did it twice, and 5 each to Hermione and Harry."
"But I didn't do anything," said Harry.
"You and Hermione answered my questions correctly at the start of the class, Harry," Lupin said lightly. "Very well, everyone. An excellent lesson. Homework, kindly read the chapter on boggarts and summarize it for me, to be handed in on Monday. That will be all."
Talking excitedly, the class left the staff room. Harry, however, wasn't feeling cheerful. Professor Lupin had deliberately stopped him from tackling the boggart. Why? Was it because he'd seen Harry collapse on the train and thought he wasn't up to much? Had he thought Harry would pass out again? But no one else seemed to have noticed anything.
"Did you see me take that banshee?"
shouted Seamus.
"And the hand," said Dean, waving his own around. "And Snape in that hat. And my mummy."
"I wonder why Professor Lupin's frightened of crystal balls," said Lavender thoughtfully.
"That was the best defense against the dark arts lesson we've ever had, wasn't it?"
said Ron excitedly as they made their way back to the classroom to get their bags.
"He seems like a very good teacher," said Hermione approvingly. "But I wish I could have had a turn with the boggart."
"What would it have been for you?" said Ron, sniggering. "A piece of homework that only got 9 out of 10? Chapter 8 Flight of the Fat Lady. In no time at all, Defense Against the Dark Arts had become most people's favorite class. Only Draco Malfoy and his gang of Slytherins had anything bad to say about Professor Lupin.
"Look at the state of his robes," Malfoy would say in a loud whisper as Professor Lupin passed. "He dresses like our old house elf."
But no one else cared that Professor Lupin's robes were patched and frayed. His next few lessons were just as interesting as the first. After boggarts, they studied redcaps, nasty little goblin-like creatures that lurked wherever there had been bloodshed, in the dungeons of castles and the potholes of deserted battlefields, waiting to bludgeon those who had gotten lost. From redcaps, they moved on to kappas, creepy water dwellers that looked like scaly monkeys with webbed hands itching to strangle unwitting waders in their ponds. Harry only wished he was as happy with some of his other classes. Worst of all was potions. Snape was in a particularly vindictive mood these days, and no one was in any doubt why. The story of the Boggart assuming Snape's shape, and the way that Neville had dressed it in his grandmother's clothes, had travelled through the school like wildfire. Snape didn't seem to find it funny. His eyes flashed menacingly at the very mention of Professor Lupin's name, and he was bullying Neville worse than ever. Harry was also growing to dread the hours he spent in Professor Trelawney's stifling tower room, deciphering lopsided shapes and symbols, trying to ignore the way Professor Trelawney's enormous eyes filled with tears every time she looked at him. He couldn't like Professor Trelawney, even though she was treated with respect bordering on reverence by many of the class. Parvati Patil and Lavender Brown had taken to haunting Professor Trelawney's tower room at lunchtimes, and always returned with annoyingly superior looks on their faces, as though they knew things the others didn't. They had also started using hushed voices whenever they spoke to Harry, as though he were on his deathbed. Nobody really liked Care of Magical Creatures, which, after the action-packed first class, had become extremely dull. Hagrid seemed to have lost his confidence. They were now spending lesson after lesson learning how to look after flobberworms, which had to be some of the most boring creatures in existence.
"Why would anyone bother looking after them?" said Ron, after yet another hour of poking shredded lettuce down the flobberworms' slimy throats.
At the start of October, however, Harry had something else to occupy him, something so enjoyable it more than made up for his unsatisfactory classes. The Quidditch season was approaching, and Oliver Wood, captain of the Gryffindor team, called a meeting one Thursday evening to discuss tactics for the new season. There were 7 people on a Quidditch team, 3 chasers, whose job it was to score goals by putting the quaffle, a red soccer-sized ball, through one of the 50-foot-high hoops at each end of the field, 2 beaters, who were equipped with heavy bats to repel the bludgers, 2 heavy black balls that zoomed around trying to attack the players, a keeper, who defended the goalposts, and the seeker, who had the hardest job of all, that of catching the golden snitch, a tiny, winged, walnut-sized ball whose capture ended the game and earned the Seeker's team an extra 150 points. Oliver Wood was a burly 17-year-old, now in his 7th and final year at Hogwarts. There was a quiet sort of desperation in his voice as he addressed his 6 fellow team members in the chilly locker rooms on the edge of the darkening Quidditch field.
"This is our last chance, my last chance to win the Quidditch Cup," he told them, striding up and down in front of them. "I'll be leaving at the end of this year. I'll never get another shot at it. Gryffindor hasn't won for 7 years now. Okay, so we've had the worst luck in the world, injuries. Then the tournament getting called off last year."
Wood swallowed as though the memory still brought a lump to his throat.
"But we also know we've got the best ruddy team in the school," he said, punching a fist into his other hand, the old manic glint back in his eye. "We've got 3 superb chasers." Wood pointed at Alicia Spinett, Angelina Johnson, and Katie Bell. "We've got 2 unbeatable beaters."
"Stop it, Oliver, you're embarrassing us," said Fred and George Weasley together, pretending to blush.
"And we've got a seeker who has never failed to win us a match," Wood rumbled, glaring at Harry with a kind of furious pride. "And me," he added as an afterthought.
"We think you're very good too, Oliver," said George.
"Spanking good keeper," said Fred. "The point is," Wood went on, resuming his pacing, "the Quidditch Cup should have had our name on it these last 2 years. Ever since Harry joined the team, I've thought the thing was in the bag. But we haven't got it, and this year's the last chance we'll get to finally see our name on the thing."
Wood spoke so dejectedly that even Fred and George looked sympathetic.
"Oliver, this year's our year," said Fred. "We'll do it, Oliver," said Angelina.
"Definitely," said Harry.
Full of determination, the team started training sessions 3 evenings a week. The weather was getting colder and wetter, the nights darker, but no amount of mud, wind, or rain could tarnish Harry's wonderful vision of finally winning the huge silver Quidditch Cup. Harry returned to the Gryffindor common room one evening after training, cold and stiff, but pleased with the way practice had gone, to find the room buzzing excitedly. "What's happened?" he asked Ron and Hermione, who were sitting in two of the best chairs by the fireside and completing some star charts for astronomy.
"First Hogsmeade weekend," said Ron, pointing at a notice that had appeared on the battered old bulletin board. "End of October, Halloween."
"Excellent," said Fred, who had followed Harry through the portrait hole. "I need to visit Zonko's. I'm nearly out of stink pellets."
Harry threw himself into a chair beside Ron, his high spirits ebbing away. Hermione seemed to read his mind.
"Harry, I'm sure you'll be able to go next time," she said. "They're bound to catch Black soon. He's been sighted once already."
"Black's not fool enough to try anything in Hogsmeade," said Ron.
"Ask McGonagall if you can go this time, Harry. The next one might not be for ages."
"Ron," said Hermione, "Harry's supposed to stay in school."
"He can't be the only third year left behind," said Ron.
"Ask McGonagall. Go on, Harry."
"Yeah, I think I will," said Harry, making up his mind.
Hermione opened her mouth to argue, but at that moment Crookshanks leapt lightly onto her lap. A large, dead spider was dangling from his mouth.
"Does he have to eat that in front of us?" said Ron, scowling.
"Clever Crookshanks, did you catch that all by yourself?" said Hermione.
Crookshanks slowly chewed up the spider, his yellow eyes fixed insolently on Ron.
"Just keep him over there, that's all," said Ron irritably, turning back to his star chart. "I've got Scabbers asleep in my bag."
Harry yawned. He really wanted to go to bed, but he still had his own star chart to complete. He pulled his bag toward him, took out parchment, ink, and quill, and started work.
"You can copy mine if you like," said Ron, labeling his last star with a flourish and shoving the chart toward Harry.
Hermione, who disapproved of copying, pursed her lips but didn't say anything. Crookshanks was still staring unblinkingly at Ron, flicking the end of his bushy tail. Then, without warning, he pounced.
"Oi!"
Ron roared, seizing his bag as Crookshanks sank four sets of claws deep inside it and began tearing ferociously.
"Get off, you stupid animal!"
Ron tried to pull the bag away from Crookshanks, but Crookshanks clung on, spitting and slashing.
"Ron, don't hurt him!" squealed Hermione.
The whole common room was watching. Ron whirled the bag around, Crookshanks still clinging to it, and Scabbers came flying out of the top.
"Catch that cat!"
Ron yelled as Crookshanks freed himself from the remnants of the bag, sprang over the table, and chased after the terrified Scabbers. George Weasley made a lunge for Crookshanks but missed. Scabbers streaked through 20 pairs of legs and shot beneath an old chest of drawers. Crookshanks skidded to a halt, crouched low on his bandy legs, and started making furious swipes beneath it with his front paws. Ron and Hermione hurried over. Hermione grabbed Crookshanks around the middle and heaved him away. Ron threw himself onto his stomach and, with great difficulty, pulled Scabbers out by the tail.
"Look at him," he said furiously to Hermione, dangling Scabbers in front of her. "He's skin and bone. You keep that cat away from him."
"Crookshanks doesn't understand. It's wrong," said Hermione, her voice shaking.
"All cats chase rats, Ron."
"There's something funny about that animal," said Ron, who was trying to persuade a frantically wiggling Scabbers back into his pocket.
"It heard me say that Scabbers was in my bag."
"Oh, what rubbish," said Hermione impatiently. "Crookshanks could smell him, Ron. How else do you think
that cat's got it in for Scabbers?"
said Ron, ignoring the people around him who were starting to giggle.
"And Scabbers was here first, and he's ill."
Ron marched through the common room and out of sight, up the stairs to the boys' dormitories. Ron was still in a bad mood with Hermione next day. He barely talked to her all through Herbology, even though he, Harry, and Hermione were working together on the same puffer pod.
"How's Scabbers?"
Hermione asked timidly, as they stripped fat pink pods from the plants and emptied the shining beans into a wooden pail.
"He's hiding at the bottom of my bed, shaking," said Ron angrily, missing the pail and scattering beans over the greenhouse floor.
"Careful, Weasley, careful!"
cried Professor Sprout as the beans burst into bloom before their very eyes. They had transfiguration next. Harry, who had resolved to ask Professor McGonagall after the lesson whether he could go into Hogsmeade with the rest, joined the line outside the class, trying to decide how he was going to argue his case. He was distracted, however, by a disturbance at the front of the line. Lavender Brown seemed to be crying. Parvati had her arm around her and was explaining something to Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, who were looking very serious.
"What's the matter, Lavender?"
said Hermione anxiously as she, Harry, and Ron went to join the group.
"She got a letter from home this morning," Parvati whispered. "It's her rabbit, Binky. He's been killed by a fox."
"Oh," said Hermione, "I'm sorry, Lavender."
"I should have known," said Lavender tragically. "You know what day it is?" "The 16th of October. That thing you're dreading, it will happen on the 16th of October, remember? She was right. She was right."
The whole class was gathered around Lavender now. Seamus shook his head seriously. Hermione hesitated, then she said,
You were dreading Binky being killed by a fox?" "Well, not necessarily by a fox," said Lavender, looking up at Hermione with streaming eyes. "But I was obviously dreading him dying, wasn't I?"
"Oh," said Hermione.
She paused again, then,
"Was Binky an old rabbit?"
No, sobbed Lavender. He was only a baby."
Parvati tightened her arm around Lavender's shoulders.
"But then, why would you dread him dying?" said Hermione.
Parvati glared at her.
"Well, look at it logically," said Hermione, turning to the rest of the group. "I mean, Binky didn't even die today, did he? Lavender just got the news today."
Lavender wailed loudly.
"She can't have been dreading it, because it's come as a real shock."
"Don't mind Hermione, Lavender," said Ron loudly. "She doesn't think other people's pets matter very much." Professor McGonagall opened the classroom door at that moment, which was perhaps lucky. Hermione and Ron were looking daggers at each other, and when they got into class, they seated themselves on either side of Harry and didn't talk to each other for the whole class. Harry still hadn't decided what he was going to say to Professor McGonagall when the bell rang at the end of the lesson, but it was she who brought up the subject of Hogsmeade first.
"One moment, please," she called as the class made to leave. "As you're all in my house, you should hand Hogsmeade permission forms to me before Halloween. No form, no visiting the village, so don't forget."
Neville put up his hand.
"Please, Professor, I think I've lost—"
"Your grandmother sent yours to me directly, Longbottom," said Professor McGonagall. "She seemed to think it was safer. Well, that's all. You may leave."
"Ask her now," Ron hissed at Harry.
"Oh, but—"
Hermione began.
"Go for it, Harry," said Ron stubbornly.
Harry waited for the rest of the class to disappear, then headed nervously for Professor McGonagall's desk.
"Yes, Potter?"
Harry took a deep breath.
"Professor, my aunt and uncle, forgot to sign my form," he said. Professor McGonagall looked over her square spectacles at him, but didn't say anything.
"So, do you think it will be all right? I mean, will you be okay if I go to Hogsmeade?" Professor McGonagall looked down and began shuffling papers on her desk.
"I'm afraid not, Potter," she said. "You heard what I said. No form, no visiting the village. That's the rule."
"But, Professor, my aunt and uncle, you know, they're muggles. They don't really understand about Hogwarts forms and stuff." Harry said, while Ron egged him on with vigorous nods. If you said I could go...
But I don't say so,
said Professor McGonagall, standing up and piling her papers neatly into a drawer.
The form clearly states that the parents or guardian must give permission.
She turned to look at him with an odd expression on her face. Was it pity?
I'm sorry, Potter, but that's my final word. You'd better hurry, or you'll be late for your next lesson.
There was nothing to be done. Ron called Professor McGonagall.